This is Harry McGee, political correspondent with the weekly political podcast on behalf of the Irish Times. And this week we're going to be talking about a relatively diverse range of topics. And I'm delighted to be joined in the Irish Times studio here by three very prominent national politicians. And I will move from left to right as I see them, not necessarily as they are on the political spectrum. But on my left is Derek Nolan, the newly elected Labour Party TD for Galway West, who has succeeded Michael D. Higgins after Michael D. Higgins' long and distinguished career. In the centre is Joan Collins, the People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central, and she's also a member of the United Left Alliance and, as by extension, is a member of the technical group of 15 independents and people from smaller party in the Dáil. And on my right-hand side, as I'm looking at it, it's Dara O'Brien, Senator Dara O'Brien, former TD, who was elected to the Shannon in the recent elections and is the leader of the Fianna Fáil group in the Shannon. You're all very welcome to this podcast. So we're going to start off first by looking at the controversy du jour, the controversy of the week, which has revolved around comments made by Richard Bruton last week on joint labour committees and on sectoral agreements with lower paid workers in a range of sectors, including hospitality, catering, security and contract cleaning. The Minister was saying one thing, Derek Nolan, but yourself and some of your Labour Party colleagues were saying something completely different. Is there a rift in Cabinet? Is there going to be a division between Fine Gael and Labour in relation to this issue?
I don't think there's a rift. What happened during the week was that the Duffy Walsh report was published by the Cabinet. And that was the only decision that the Cabinet has made, was to publish this report and to consult on it. The report was quite wide-ranging and intensive. Its two main recommendations, as far as I could see it, was that there was a definite need for an overhaul of the mechanisms of JLCs and employment registered agreements, but that there was no evidence that there was substantial wage premium and that there was no evidence that reducing these wages would increase to would lead to any increased employment. So that was the basis on which the report was published. Minister and the Programme for Government commits to a review of these mechanisms. As the line minister, Richard Bruton, has made his proposals known, they're much more wide-ranging and deep than the report says. It calls for a restriction on overtime and, in certain circumstances, the abolition of Sunday premiums. That wasn't in the report, and it's not in the programme for government. So I think that that these are the minister's views. He's entitled to bring them, but I think that as a Labour Party member of a government, I'm entitled to view my disagreement with it, especially when it's not something that's in the programme for government. And so the idea is that we would inform the debate. It's not a rift, because there hasn't been any decision made on it. There's a debate started. The minister is consulting with the social partners, and I think that as a TD and several of my colleagues as TDs, that we're entitled to have our say on it and to bring those concerns to light.
Tommy Bruhan, your colleague from Dublin North East, said that it was a red line issue for him. Is it a red line issue for the Labour Party? Is it a red line issue for you?
I think it's certainly a very important issue, and it's not one that will be that would be easily gotten over with us. I think that we are a Labour Party. We would see ourselves as standing up for the most vulnerable in society, and that the people who are the subject of these JLCs are, like you say, people in the hospitality sector, catering, contract cleaning. They're not people earning substantial wage premiums. They're living, they're working to live. They've already been hit by the last Fianna Fáil government by huge tax increases, by the USC, which is really impacting them. And I don't think, honestly, that there's any scope for wage reductions in these sectors without people seriously hurting. So I think that will inform our position on it, and that's why we're being very vocal about it.
Joan Collins, should it be a red line issue for the Labour Party? Should it be a red line issue for government?
Well, I think it's up to the Labour Party. I'm not in the Labour Party, so it's up to them to make a decision how they go on this. But it certainly doesn't come as a surprise to me in relation to the statements that Richard Bruton has made, because this is part and forms part of the Memorandum of Understanding under the IMF EU subprime loan, as I call it. It's not a bailout. It specifically mentions that the minimum wage could be allowed to be increased, reversed back to its previous level of being cut on the basis that the EROs and wages were going to be looked at. So that was my understanding of the memorandum of understanding, and that's what I've read out of it. So it doesn't come as a surprise to me. So I think it's a bit it's a bit of a smokescreen, some of the Labour Party TDs coming out against it now, because I think that's what they've bought into in relation to the whole memorandum of understanding.
But isn't there an argument for it? Isn't there an argument that says that there are employers out there who are struggling in a society that has suffered a terrible recession, who can hardly afford to keep people in work? They are hidebound by these agreements. If there was some wiggle room, if they were paying, of course it involves paying for the workers, as they paid a little bit less for Sunday, but at least they're in employment, they're not in the dole, and by making these changes you can bring a little bit of competition into the economy, and you can also keep people in work who might otherwise have to sign on the dole.
Well, the thing about it is, how far do you go? We're in the situation where the austerity programme been implemented by government following from the debacle of Fianna Fáil and the Greens means that people most vulnerable positions in life are the ones that are getting hit time and time again. I think it's coming to a point where people just can't... If you take more money out of the pockets of people, it's going to really impose huge difficulties on family life and on people trying to survive. And there are alternatives. There's very wealthy people, we keep saying all the time, there's very wealthy people in this country that can well afford to pay something. That a lot of them aren't paying anything at all, but in taxes in relation to the crisis that we're facing. Under capitalism, that can be done.
Yeah, but I mean, every political party in the run-up to the election was saying, "Well, we'll do a raid on the National Pension Reserve Fund." And when you tot it up, all the totals. The National Pension Reserve Fund would have needed to have about 200 or 300 billion euro in it to cater for everybody's needs. A lot of left-wing parties saying tax the rich, but there doesn't seem to be any fat there anymore. There aren't as many rich people, there aren't as many people earning those huge salaries as there were maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it's not going to bring the bonanza that you and your colleagues have been.
They have 120 billion worth of assets, and the rich actually went up in the last 2 years. The rich list in the Sunday Times there a couple of weeks ago, they've actually increased their wealth. They've increased their wealth on gold and silver commodities and all that. They've transferred their wealth from the banks into those areas. So, and they're also betting on us whether we can pay back our loans or not. And that's how they're still making money. So the wealthy have plenty of money. And the fact of the matter is, through all the tax breaks and all that, they were brought in by the Fianna Fáil government, that these people are paying no tax. And they've historically paid no tax in this country for the last nearly 60 years.
Okay, Darragh O'Brien, I'll bring you in at this stage. Two questions. The political question, the first thing, your observation as a person who has experienced coalition. Is this going to be the beginning of a rift between Fine Gael and Labour? And secondly, your overall view on these sectoral agreements. So Fianna Fáil in government agreed with it, with the EU IMF. Yeah. And do you still think that it's going far enough at the moment?
Well, to deal with the first issue, it probably doesn't bode well for a new government that this is their first serious test, and where you do have, I agree with discussion. I was in a coalition government. TDs are entitled to their view, and I think I welcome that from the Taoiseach Eamon Gilmore. I think, you know, it's right that people discuss this. But having said that, at this early stage in a government's term, when you have TDs such as Tommy Bruin saying that this is a red line issue, they haven't even got into a budget yet. I'm talking to someone who's gone through 4 or 5 extremely difficult budgets where you have a responsibility in government, where sometimes you have to make decisions that do stick in your craw, that, you know, personally, that you might have a difficulty with. But the job of government is to look at the wider picture and the bigger picture. I'll be interested to see how this plays out, because I think I actually think that the coalition hamstrung themselves before the election. They hamstrung themselves on the basis that they committed to reversing the cut in the minimum wage for new entrants into the workforce. That never applied to existing. I participated in the debates in the Dáil at the time, where people were from the now government were actually saying that this was going to affect existing terms and conditions, which it never was. That was a way of actually encouraging employers to take people on at a lower rate. Now, by reversing that cut, something else has to give. So this government, by actually reversing the cut in the minimum wage, now they're looking at existing workers. They're looking at premium hours. They're looking at JLCs. And by the way, the previous government were looking at the joint labour agreements as well. I think some of them are outdated, to be frank. I think it's up to the government to make up their mind on that. But I think when you give something, when you actually made such a a case for the importance of reversing the minimum wage cut when it wasn't really. It was affecting 3% of our workforce were on the minimum wage, and it wasn't even affecting them. It was new entrants to the market. Then something's got to give. So that's what this government has found itself in a position. Well, we've done this, and now where are we going to get? Now where are we going to get the money from? Now, what's my view on the JLCs and the Sunday premium hours? I think some of them are outdated. I think a review is required. Absolutely, the previous government would have done that as well. Now, Do I believe that they should, that things should be slashed and burned across the place? No, I don't. But I think if Sunday is part of your normal working week, and this is a personal view, so if I'm working from a Wednesday to a Sunday and that's my normal working week, premium hours, in my view, should not apply in that case. Whereas if I'm working from a Monday to a Friday and I'm called in on a Saturday or a Sunday as overtime, absolutely fine. But particularly in the hospitality sector, which is on its knees at the moment, and the restaurant businesses and various things, you know, I think that this has to be looked at. I think it's important the government discuss it, yes, but for Labour TDs in particular, and I'm not saying Derek, but to say that at this early stage in the government, this is a red line issue. It doesn't really bode well when I haven't even got into a budget in December, where there'll be much tougher decisions will have to be taken then. So we'll wait and see.
Isn't that a fair point, Derek, that even workers in relatively low-paid jobs have to be flexible as well, and times have changed. We're looking at a society that's markedly different from the time the JLCs and the employment agreements were brokered 40, sometimes 50, sometimes 55 years ago. And isn't it true that the heightening of the minimum wage was a quid pro quo for this, that Labour are going to have to take their gruel on this and they're going to have to concede on it? Isn't that true?
It's not true, actually. It's a fact. If you ask the people who were renegotiating the latest adjustments to the Memorandum of Understanding, there was a deliberate and intentional delinking of the two issues. So there was no quid pro quo within in the discussions with the Troika. There was the reversal of the minimum wage standing on its own as a decision, and the decision to review the JLCs. That is a fact, and that if you ask the ministers who were involved in those negotiations, and that was very important for the Labour Party to achieve that. I worked in retail myself for many years. All through college I would have worked. Sundays are a special day, not because of any religious thing, but because generally families have time off on Sundays, and you are sacrificing more by working on a Sunday than you are by working any other day of the week. You are isolating yourself from social sphere, you're isolating yourself from family activity, and you're isolating yourself from what would be considered to be a normal working week and a normal free time. So I believe that a moderate premium, which is what the report says exists, of about time and a third, a very moderate premium is fair in those circumstances. The other thing that was mentioned was we're not going after the rich. The government in the programme for government has committed to introducing an effective minimum tax rate of 30% on people in this country. We had a case over many years where with tax reliefs and with schemes that you could actually pay no tax in this country if you were earning over a certain amount of money. I think that to make that an effective tax rate of 30% is a huge increase and is definitely tackling the issue. But also to the employers, it's not like we're simply saying, right, we're not doing anything to help employment. The sectors that are affected, such as catering, contract cleaning, which affects hotels, for instance, are benefiting doubly, not only from the halving of the PRSI for employers in those sectors, but also in the terms of the VAT reduction, which is targeted at people in the tourist industry to help get their business going. So it's not like we're saying we're doing nothing for you. We're trying to stimulate demand by cutting VAT and bringing in tourists, and also cutting the cost of employment by cutting PRSI. And I think that that's a fair exchange for saying that people who are working for you should be able to earn moderate incomes. And we're not talking about huge incomes here. Actually, moderate might even be an exaggeration. Who are earning very low incomes and need to be protected because they are the most vulnerable people in society.
Well, they say that politics is the art of possible, but governments always seems to be the art, or the lack of art, of compromise. And is this not the first of a series of compromises that the Labour Party and Fine Gael are going to have to do in relation to water charges, in relation to property tax, in relation to third level fees? Isn't the reality of government that Labour are going to have to swallow hard and accept that some of their principles or some of their red line issues are going to have to cede?
I think that this will be a very difficult government, and no one is under any illusions that it will be an easy 4 or 5 years. That's why we're in what you could call a national government. It would have been much more in the Labour Party's interest if it wished to go into opposition as the largest opposition party and to build our base and to regroup. But we decided that in the national interest, a strong, large, stable government was it. What the government will do will implement the programme for government, which has many of those issues outlined. There will be, for instance, various charges and taxes increased. But what we won't do is implement things which are beyond that. And what I would say is that I do not think that this is a Labour issue. I think that there has been very silent backbenches in Fine Gael. One or two TDs have come out in support of Richard Bruton. I'm not sensing a huge appetite within the Fine Gael party itself for reform that I proposed.
Okay, just talk about some of the other charges. I mean, one of the things that you've campaigned about over the years, John Collins, has been local utility charges, water charges. But I presume that you're against a property tax as well, or are you in favour of a property tax?
Well, we'd be not in favour of a property tax on the basis of a poll tax at every household and, you know, the size of the house, all that sort of thing. So we'd be opposed to property taxes in general.
So how do you think the government can raise money then? Just by taxing those with the highest incomes? And
well,
would that give you the type of money?
We haven't even started on that, and this is what should be done first. That's where we should be looking at. Where in that category we can get money from. We should be bringing in a wealth tax. I mean, we're the only country in Europe that hasn't got a wealth tax in relation to the very wealthy, as has been pointed out about taxation on income. In relation to raising all that money, I mean, you can raise an awful lot of money on that. If you brought in the wealth tax, 1% on the 120 billion would be 1 billion. So if you had a 5% or 10%, you'd be getting 10 billion euro in per year alone on that. So they're all the avenues that should be looked at first. Because if you keep coming back on ordinary people who've taken just they've been punch drunk nearly over the last 2 years in relation to the amount of cuts they've had in their wages and the lack of spending money and spending power. To go after us again, it's illogical, because that means you have less money to go out there and buy the goods. That means you're putting more pressure on small businesses to let people go, and it's just a downward spiraling effect.
There's always been one aspect of your opposition or the People For Profit or your group's opposition to water charges that I've found to be slightly illogical, in that people who waste water or who waste, which is a very precious resource, who waste water are essentially allowed to get away literally scot-free. And to me, it seems logical that you pay for what you use. So if somebody's using an awful lot of water and using a lot of water wastefully, they should pay for it. And isn't the whole concept of a water meter where people pay for what they use, doesn't that make sense in terms of societal responsibility?
No, I think what makes sense is putting structures in place so that people use less of that precious water, because it is precious water.
I mean,
we have a situation where the water pipes underground in this city, something like 28% of it is leaked out through, this is precious water leaked out through those pipes. So first of all, there should be the structural work done in those pipes. Secondly, and it could be part of a programme of government to have a national installation programme in all homes and industry and public buildings to change the water from pure water going into drinking situation, and then change the water from rainwater, etc., for using in our toilets, etc., because we're flushing good water down our toilets. It's just crazy. So if that was brought in, then you wouldn't have a situation where there was a huge waste of the water that we absolutely need, and that's processed in the way it should be, and therefore you'd only have people using drinking water to drink as such.
And you're the water then. Pay a premium for having a swimming pool in Fox Rock?
No, I do think that there should be a huge VAT on that. Why not have 40% VAT or some sort of a cost to charge when you're buying your swimming pool, that you're going to pay for it at source, rather than imposing on everybody else a water tax? If this person has enough money to pay for a swimming pool, will pay the charges, you buy your swimming pool and pay it every year. Necessary. There's ways around these things.
Does it strike you sometimes that the new politics is the old politics and the new government is
I'm trying to figure out where we're at the moment, because we've got to be... Look, very much of what this government will have to do, because we're in a very difficult economic situation, will not be entirely different than what any government would do in this situation. So that's my own view on it. I think when you look at the situation, there are different nuances, and we'll certainly support government where we believe it's the right thing to do, and we'll oppose it where we believe that they're not going right on certain issues. You take the water issue you've just discussed here as well. We've got to be realistic about these things. You know, it's a precious resource. Yes, there is a lot of wastage. Joan is right as well. It's been proven, by the way, in relation to when Joan's colleagues and before campaigned against bin charges. It's been proven that we've actually been able to increase significantly the amount of recyclable waste and reduce what's going to landfill.
Because you could have done that with
Joan, I didn't interrupt you once, okay? So just hear me out on this. I'm not saying you have to agree with me, okay? But what I would say is that the polluter pays principle has worked with regard to, and is working with regard to, waste management. We've got to manage our water. Water will be a major crisis in 30, 40 years' time as to a very, very precious resource that people need. Now, what I am opposed to, by the way, is in putting meters in where and just a flat charge. Okay, that isn't the, that you've got to pay for what you use and have a premium for of unused based on what's in the family, like a free amount of water too. But what this government are proposing is to bring in water charges effectively without water metering being completed. Now, I personally am opposed to that. I think that if you allow people to manage their usage of water, to allow them to track what it's costing, then absolutely you're not going to have people washing their cars out in the street, or as you say, your swimming pool in Fox Rock or whatever it is. But you've got to... So bringing in those type of charges at this stage is premature. It should only be done when metering is completed. And when metering is completed, I'd absolutely agree with them because it'll work.
Yeah, the Department of Finance telling them they can't put in water meters unless they have the money to do it, and the only way that they can have the money to do it is by imposing that charge. But just briefly, Derek Long, because we're running out of time here, what's the Labour Party position on water charges? In its manifesto, the Labour Party opposed the introduction of water charges. You have ceded to a certain extent on that. What's the Labour Party position?
Well, it's in the programme for government that there will be a charge based on water usage, and I think that is coming. There's a few things there. There's the financial necessity to fund local government and to pay for the water, and there is also EU obligations on it. I think the long-term goal is, as Dara has pointed out, to have water metering paying for what you use, and that's what the government is working towards.
Okay. I'm afraid we'll have to leave it at that. We have gone way over time, as they say on all the best radio shows. I am very indebted to my three guests this morning: Derek Nolan from the Labour Party, Joan Collins from People for Profit, and Senator Dara O'Brien from Fianna Fáil. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Harry.
Thanks. Sorry.